Blog Talk Radio.
Edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, on this 24th of May 2014, as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180 is a call number. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or hit me up on Facebook at www.facebook.com/CyrilQuinn, or go to my website, CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. NBA playoffs reach, the conference finals, two games into the conference finals. And, what do we know? What have we found out through these first two games is really been a reversal of what we thought we were going to see in terms of the two conferences. We thought that the Eastern Conference could be, might not be competitive. Indiana coming in, not playing great. We all know about the off-the-court stuff, Paul George, Roy Hibbert, that whole soap opera. Miami coming in, only losing one game in their first two playoff series. Even though I thought it would be a competitive series, a lot of people thought, hey, it could be an easy five-game series. That has not been the case. Indiana is going to be around maybe for a tough six- or seven-game series, and Indiana has a chance, though you still fear Miami, to take out the Heat. Western Conference, we expected a classic. We expected these two, despite the fact that Ibaka was supposedly going to be done for the rest of the postseason with the injury. I thought that it still would be a toss-up series, home court series, San Antonio in seven. And what we've seen is a just onslaught, a surgical just destruction of the Oklahoma City Thunder at the hands of the San Antonio Spurs. San Antonio Spurs have been near perfect in these two games, and I know Ibaka will come back possibly game three, maybe game four, but at this point, it really doesn't matter. So kind of a role reversal in terms of the two conferences. All year long, we've been beating up on the Eastern Conference. It was a two-horse race. Western Conference, first round, was off the charts, all these great series going down, either six or seven games. But now we find ourselves, as basketball fans, probably solely dependent on the Eastern Conference as far as any drama or entertainment value or any entertainment value as far as what these teams are going to do. San Antonio seems to be a lock to be in the NBA Finals, while the Miami Heat and the Indiana Pacers are going to beat the tar out of each other. I mean, it sets up perfectly. The way this thing is going, it sets up perfectly for the San Antonio Spurs. San Antonio Spurs are going to get the series over with in either four or five games. They'll be well-rested, just some guys, older guys, some guys that are banged up, and just be primed and poised and licking their chops to play either Indiana or Miami. I think they prefer the Miami Heat, even though Miami would be a tough matchup. I think they want Miami. So we'll see what that happens. Of course, NBA Finals will begin on June 5th. 347 347-215-6180 on this latest edition of the Cyril Coin Review. Busy show, a lot to do this weekend on this Memorial Day weekend. Hope you're out there enjoying, hope you're enjoying the unofficial beginning of the summer season. Get out there to a, you know, nice pool, get a couple, you know, get a couple of beaches maybe, you know, and just enjoy this extended weekend. This is the Cyril Coin Review. We'll be right back.
Step by step, all the happy saints go marching in. If a saint step out of line, you have to start again. Cause Jacob's golden ladder gets slippery at the top. And many a happy-go-lucky saint has made that long, long drop. If I'm late, don't wait. Don't stop me.
Is your call number, Cyril Coin Review headlines. Shelly Sterling, Donald Sterling is going to allow Shelly Sterling to negotiate the sale of the team. So pretty much the long, dragged-out fight that I kind of expected, that what most people expected with between Donald Sterling and the NBA is will more likely not come to pass. Sterling's going to do the smart thing and just flat out sell. That franchise could sell up to upwards of $1.5 billion, if not more. Certainly right now, certainly if you're the NBA, you have to be relieved by this. This thing could have got very ugly, very fast, had Sterling chose to fight this all the way through. But listen, Sterling may be stubborn. He may be a racist. He may be, you know, just delusional. But the one thing he's not is he's not stupid. And, you know, if you're Donald Sterling, you fight this thing out. You go, you risk, you know, players boycotting. You will, and more importantly than that, you will devalue your own franchise. Because, listen, the NBA, you know, all the NBA has to do is just let the players become free agents, let Doc Rivers, let those guys out their contracts and go elsewhere. And a franchise goes from being worth $1 billion to probably, you know, barred peanuts, $300 or $400 million. I mean, just that fast. So, when you're Donald Sterling, listen, you're going to get $1 billion and what have you, and, you know, go about your business. I think, you know, Sterling, I don't know who got to Sterling and talked and, you know, and got into his ear, but he, you know, this fight would not have been worth it. But everybody would have lost in this fight. Sterling, the NBA, fans, players, this would have been, again, something that could have just been outright just ugly and could have been, could have really tarnished the NBA for years to come, to be honest with you. Ray Rice, Baltimore Raven running back, apologizes in a news conference yesterday with his, with his wife, Janae Rice, sitting right next to him. Thing I found about this, two things that bothered me about this. Number one, how long it took. Remember, this thing took place in February, okay? February. It is now May 24th. He apologized May 23rd. Then you had the team. You had the team posting on the website that his wife apologizes for her part in the matter. You have him apologizing to the organization before he apologizes to his wife publicly. I don't care if he apologized to his wife a million times and behind closed doors. You get up there, okay, you get up there in front of millions watching in a press conference. The first person you should apologize to is the lady that you knocked out cold. You didn't knock John Harbaugh out. You didn't knock Steve Bruschi out. You knocked your wife out. At the time, your girlfriend, now your wife. Don't get me started on how she could marry a dude who knocked it out cold. I don't even want to get into that. I just don't. But, it's kind of... it seemed genuine. I'm not going to sit up there and say his apology was phony and he was up there just reading from a letter or what have you, a statement. But, the NFL just, in situations like that, NFL coddles these players. They coddle these players. Everybody, in situations like that, NFL has so many off-the-field incidents. It's unbelievable. Unless something just catastrophic happens, teams just, let the lawyers handle it or let the situation take its course. Ray Rice is not going to do any jail time. Ray Rice is not going to, other than just public embarrassment, what is Ray Rice losing? What has Ray Rice learned? To be honest with you, I'm just going to be very curious to see what the NFL does once everything plays out with this. Once things play out in terms of this case, because he should be suspended for minimum two to three games, easy. Easy. Anybody holding their breath on the NFL doing anything to Jim Irsay, please just stop right now. He gets charged with two misdemeanors, and again arrested the whole nine. Think the NFL is going to do anything to an owner? Think that's going to suspend Jim Irsay, fine Jim Irsay? Not going to happen. The difference is in the two sports. NBA players get blasted when off the field, when off the court incidents happen. They get destroyed. NFL. La 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 la. Okay. Oh, he got in trouble. All right. When does the season start? I mean, that's the difference. And it's strictly popularity. I mean, that's the popularity of the NFL versus the popularity of the NBA domestically. I'm not talking about worldwide, but domestically. NFL gets a pass. They always do. Players always get a pass in the NFL. 347-215-6180. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Serial Crew Review. When we return, owners going wild. We'll discuss the state of ownership in sports. That's coming up and much, much more on this latest edition of the Serial Crew Review. We'll be right back. ¶¶ 215-6180 is a call number. Prince Fielder looks like he's done for the season with the neck surgery. He's going to have neck surgery, and if you're the Texas Rangers, and I said this at the time when this deal was made between Texas and Detroit, that and Detroit clearly got bailed out by Texas. Prince Fielder is what, 30 years old. He still has about 8 years, $114 million left on that contract. And, you know, prior to this season, he had been one of the most durable players in all of baseball. And I think 7 seasons, he had missed like 13 games the previous 7 seasons. So his durability hadn't been an issue. But that contract, you know, they're stuck with that contract. And nobody's going to touch Prince Fielder, you know, as the steroid testing, PED testing, as that has improved over the course of the last 4 or 5 years in Major League Baseball. We've seen guys get into their 30s and actually numbers start dropping like they're supposed to. And, again, baseball doesn't have a strong salary cap. The luxury tax is like a salary cap. But just the fact that you're going to be stuck with a guy making that kind of money, I mean, it puts you in a place where, you know, Texas Rangers, you know, they have money to spend, but they don't have Red Sox, Yankee, they don't have that type of money. They can't afford to just take on, make a mistake like that. They just can't. So it's be very interesting to see how that turns out. Again, Detroit Tigers, you know, are not doing cartwheels that he's hurt, but just got bailed out because it was a terrible contract to begin with. It was confused with, I mean, I understand Victor Martinez was out last year. They felt they got desperate, but, you know, Detroit gets bailed out because they're going to have to pay, already paid Verlander. They're going to pay Max Scherzer, just pay Cabrera. So trading him for Ian Gensler sort of allowed him to make a bigger run at Max Scherzer. Don't think they would have been able to pay Max Scherzer if Fielder would have been still on the team with that contract. And again, he's going to be done for the season. And, you know, Texas has just been, they've been ravaged by injuries over the course of the season. And that's just another one in a season when it's been a season to forget for the Texas Rangers. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Circle Review. You know, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen two franchises. One, you know, with this has some decent success, and the other who's been a joke for years. And I'll start with Memphis first. Memphis Grizzlies this year, of course, made it to the first round, played a great series against Oklahoma City, almost beat Oklahoma City. Last year were in the conference finals. Okay, so in 2 years, they make it to the conference finals, they fire the coach. They win 50 games, make it to the first round, despite the fact that they lost their best player, Mark Gasol, for about 23 games. And now, you know, you hear that they're allowing their coach to interview Dave Jager, to interview with the Minnesota Timberwolves. They fired the team president, fired assistant general manager. And, you know, when you see stuff like this, it's, you know, it really is disturbing as a sports fan, because, you know, I grew up with the school of thought that when a time when owners, they owned the team, they signed the checks, they conducted the business of the team, they had personnel people in place, they had scouts in place, they let the coaches coach, and that was it. Now these owners, and I guess it might have started with Jerry Jones, back in 89, but even after he fired Jimmy Johnson. But now these owners are just out of control. I mean, the Memphis situation, Memphis is not, you know, before Lionel Hollins, Memphis had one, you know, had a couple good seasons before Lionel Hollins got there, but for the most part, Memphis was a first round and done playoff team. Last year, they were a legit championship contender under Lionel Hollins. And if I'm a coach, a quality coach, despite the talent of that team, you look at that dysfunction, who wants to coach there? And they're not a team, they're not a franchise that's going to overpay for coaches anyway. They're not going to give a coach, you know, a Steve Kerr or a Stan Van Gundy type contract. The Cleveland Browns, what's transpiring in their treatment of with Johnny Manziel. Owner comes out, basically says, "Hey, Manziel should come in and act like a backup." Think about what I just said. You draft a guy in the first round to be your franchise quarterback. He comes in, and you say, well, he should act like a backup. You have your head coach come out and basically say that, you know, he's significantly behind Brian Hoyer, the great Brian Hoyer. So we thought that the biggest problem with Manziel would be, one of the biggest problems would be everything that came with him, you know, Johnny Football, celebrity status, the whole nine. It turns out that the biggest problem probably is the Cleveland Browns and their ownership in terms of drawing attention to him that he doesn't need. You know, look what happened with Golden State with the Mark Jackson situation. And it's becoming just more prevalent in sports where these owners, they want to be, you know, they want to be in front of the cameras. They want to be in front of the cameras. They want to, you know, make personnel moves. And it's only going to get worse, because when you look at the state of sports, Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, financially, whether you love the on-the-field product or not, or on-the-court product or not, revenue in those three sports has never been higher. Never. I mean, like, there's so much money in baseball, it allows teams who don't, you know, are not willing to spend a lot of money to have money to spend. It allows teams to compete, who are not the Yankees, who are not the Red Sox, with the revenue share. Same thing in the NBA. I mean, these teams are, you know, these teams, when the NBA signs this new television deal in a couple of years, I mean, the finances are going to go through the roof, which means that it's going to put just more money in the pockets of these owners who are already feel entitled and who are already, you know, they are, you know, more as hands-on as they ever been. And when an owner starts to act like a fan, your franchise is in trouble. Look what's going on with the Lakers. Look what's been going on with the Knicks for all these years. So again, it is a growing problem in sports that is, to me, is only getting worse. Only getting worse. Three four seven 215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Silicon Review. We'll be right back. This is the latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Mark Cuban comes out and kind of like a continuation to his slippery slope comment about the Donald Sterling situation a few weeks back. Comes out basically says, you know, we all have prejudices and we all have bigoted moments, so to speak. Not the smartest way in terms of how he framed what he was trying to say. I got the gist of it. And basically saying that he would cross the street if he saw a young black man in a hoodie, or he tried to then flip it to if he saw, you know, a white man shaved head, tattoos everywhere. I mean, you know, he didn't need to explain his own personal prejudice to make his point, like, to be honest with you, he really didn't. You know, I got the gist of what he was trying to say. You know, he was asked about the Donald Sterling, so it's not like he just came out just out of nowhere to make this. He was asked about this. You know, maybe with Shelly Sterling negotiating the sale of the team, maybe this becomes less likely of a scenario, but you kind of get the sense that you don't know where when that vote comes out, and that vote is supposed to be June 3rd, the vote on whether or not to kick Donald Sterling out, put kick Donald Sterling basically out of the NBA, that, in terms of that vote, a vote Donald Sterling out as an owner, it makes you believe that, you know, that Cuban might be struggling with, you know, with the way he's going to vote, and that other owners. I mean, I don't think this is going. I don't think it's going to have much of an impact on what. I think Sterling's going to be out. I don't think the NBA wants to deal with this. So I'll be shocked, beyond shocked, and appalled if the Adam Silver didn't get the 3/4 vote necessary to oust Donald Sterling as owner of the Clippers. But I definitely want to, we want to get a sense of how that vote is going to go in terms of how many guys will vote in Donald Sterling's favor. Because it's one thing, you know, you say slippery slope, okay. Then you come out, pat Adam Silver on the back when he made his decision, you support him 100%, so on and so on. Now you come out with these comments, you know, we all have bigoted moments and things of that nature. It kind of makes me wonder a little bit about Cuban. I'm not calling Cuban a racist, but it just in terms of, I'm just talking about in terms of what direction he's going to go in when that vote comes out. Because to me, it's almost like he's defending Donald Sterling without actually coming out and saying he's defending Donald Sterling. But I'm telling you, if, you know, you expect that vote to go decisively in favor of the NBA. If that vote goes, if let's say, you know, out of the 30 teams, you get 27, and you get 27 votes, and like three owners vote against it, vote for Sterling. What is going to be the perception of those three owners and those three franchises? If you're a player, would you want to play for those three, with any of those three franchises? Think about that. Now, Sterling's out, which is the main thing, okay, and the most important thing. But still, if that vote isn't unanimous, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see just how somebody voting for Sterling, how that affects the perception of those particular franchises. I don't think there'll be boycotts. I don't think things, you know, I don't think anything catastrophic will happen. But again, would you want to play for those franchises? (347) 215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back.
Long on the rendezvous. Now it's off my screen time.
347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Cynical Review. Hope you're enjoying the beginning of this Memorial Day weekend as we discuss the world of sports, NBA, NBA playoffs. You'll have Miami, Indiana tonight at 8:30 in Miami. Paul George will play and clear to play. Of course, he suffered a concussion in game two, and let me tell you, this, how the NBA handled that situation was as bad as you could possibly handle a situation involving a concussion. Paul George was basically out, not knocked out cold, but he might have been out cold. He gets kicked twice, a knee in the head by Dwayne Wade, takes two blows to the head, is laying on the court for a good, it had to be a good 5 minutes. Maybe it was less than that, but it was seemingly it was a long time. Maybe 2 to 3 minutes with his head down. So you didn't know what his eye, I mean, how was he allowed to come back in that game? I mean, there's no way he should have been able to come back in that game. I mean, the NBA, I understand the NBA's concussion policy is nowhere near where the NFL is at right now, considering how much more, obviously how much more physical the NFL is than the NBA. But the dude had a concussion. There's no way that he would have passed all the necessary battery tests to return to that game. There's no way. And then after the game, he said, of course, I blacked out, had blurred vision. Yes, you had a concussion. Again, in that situation, I don't blame the player. I blame the Pacers. I blame the Pacers franchise. And the NBA for not forcing him out of the game. Same thing happened, they had the same thing happen to a lesser extent with George, with Roy Hibbert when he caught the elbow from LeBron a few weeks back. And again, if you don't want to get, like, in the NBA, I don't believe in conspiracy theories and with refereeing and things of that nature, but it's, when you see something like that, Paul George is a star in this league, television ratings, things of that nature come about, it does make you wonder. And it does make you question the entire concussion system for the NBA. He's been cleared to play Saturday, suffered a concussion. That game was Tuesday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we would have had 3 days off. Again, NFL guys get concussions normally. Normally, they miss the following game, automatic. When a guy gets a concussion, normally that's automatic. That's going to be an automatic miss at least one game. Okay. What does my audience think about this? Let's take a phone call here. Caller, what's on your mind? Where are you from? Yes, you're on the line. You're on the air. Caller, you're on the air.
You can't hear me. Can you hear me?
I can't hear you. I can hear you now. Where are you from? What's your question?
Oh, what was my question? I'm not sure what you were talking about. I just got on and I just started listening.
Yeah, we was talking about the Paul George concussion situation and how the NBA handled it, or didn't handle it, I should say.
I mean, they handled it good. He chose to sit out. I mean, what else could they, I would think, because he's supposed to sit out, and then now he's supposed to be clear day by day. I mean,
you said he chose. He didn't. You said he chose to sit out. He didn't sit out the game. He continued to play in the game.
Oh yeah, he did. He did continue to play the game. I mean, he probably most likely when a guy get a concussion, a lot of times they want to be in the game, and he probably didn't express how he was really feeling till they lost the game. That's what it seemed like to me. He didn't express his blurriness and he couldn't see. I don't think he expressed that to the bench.
Then he
came out and said, I couldn't see, and I was blurry, and I wasn't good. So I don't know.
That's a fair point. You know, athletes, you know, are by nature, most athletes are going to try to play a, you know, the tough role, you know, especially in football and basketball, and, you know, it's an alpha dog sport. So he didn't, you know, he probably didn't express how he was feeling. He had a moment, fourth quarter, close game. Eastern Conference Finals, but if you, you know, he is their franchise player, and if you see a guy take a hit like that and lay on the ground, he was on the ground for a long time.
Yeah, he was.
So to me, I think at some point common sense would have to come into play, and you take him off the court to see if he, if everything's okay. I just think that they, you know, it was a situation where, again, he is a moment, Eastern Conference Finals, that they just let him play on, inexplicably let him play on, and again, the guy was playing with a concussion. And I think there's really no, in today's sports era, in terms of how serious these concussions are, there's really, really no place for that at this point, and no understanding how serious a concussion can be.
But see, the NBA is kind of tricky. You know, the NFL, I mean, you know already, you know, their rules and what happens. The NBA is kind of tricky when it comes to concussions because a lot of these guys lay on the floor forever and they get up and they're okay in the NBA. A lot of times I've seen guys and even LeBron, I've been seeing him and I'm like, damn, LeBron's going to be out for, you know, some games after that. And next you know, he gets up after a long time and then starts to play and he's back the next game and the next game is like, I think the NBA is not really educated on it as, like, football. It took a while for football to get educated on concussions. I think the NBA, you're right, in a sense, because they didn't know how to deal with it. I think they didn't know how to deal with it. It wasn't really their fault, but the team didn't know how to deal with it. They were thinking, you're all right. You're up. Yeah,
you're absolutely right from that standpoint. The NBA does not, at this point, they have a system that's in place. Just to say that they have a system in place, it's not anywhere near as polished as the NFL concussion system and protocol. So they don't. You're right. They don't know how to deal with it. And it's again, and you don't see a lot of concussions. Let's be honest. You don't see a lot of concussions in the NBA for the most part. But after a situation like that, after, you know, what happened with Roy Hibbert a couple months ago with LeBron, he caught an elbow from LeBron. I don't know if you remember that play. NBA needs to, in the offseason, really look hard into fixing the system so that, they don't have too many concussions, but so that they can be ready if, say, a guy does get knocked in the head or something like that happens. They need to, because listen, these guys, listen, are making tens and tens of millions of dollars. And unlike the NFL, these contracts in the NBA are guaranteed. You don't want to lose a guy for a substantial amount of time or have his career jeopardized who's making less like a $100 million contract with a concussion. So it just as to protect your
yeah, your asset or whatever. And yeah, Paul George, he was non-existent after that. That's why I said he didn't return to the game because it felt like he didn't return. Because after that concussion, you could tell it really because he was like non-existent. It was like he wasn't even there, basically. Hello? 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 What happened? Hello? I think the connection is better. Hello?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back on. Yeah, he no. Listen, he was struggling before. Listen, he was 1-for-12 before the concussion. So
oh yeah, he's back.
The concussion didn't help. So he was like, yeah, it was a major struggle throughout the course of the game for him in general, even before the concussion. But I mean, my overall point is, you don't want to see any player obviously get hurt or get hurt with a concussion and what have you. But you definitely don't want to risk your future, your franchise guy who's 24 years old is going to be around for a long time. Because you as an organization or as a league dropped the ball in terms of dealing with this guy having a concussion. And that's my overall problem with how the NBA went about it, that you, if you put a system in place as a billion-dollar corporation organization, it's your job to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, as far as I'm concerned, especially when it comes to the health and welfare of your players.
Yeah, that's true. What do you think, Indiana, what's going to be the series? How's the series going to be looking when Indiana return back to – when the Pacers return back to Indiana? What do you think it's going to be?
I think it's going to be 2-2. I think Indiana has – to me, Indiana has established themselves in this series, despite the fact they lost game two, that they can beat Miami – Miami has no matchups for David West or Roy Hibbert inside. They've struggled with Lance Stephenson. It's just going to be it's a matter of can Indiana get enough offense in key spots down the stretch in these close games against Miami. I still give Miami the edge in this series, but Indiana, to me, Indiana has a definite chance to win this series, and I would not be surprised if Indiana won this series. I think if Indiana is going to win this series, it's going to have to be in 7 games. I think if Miami wins this series, it'll be in 6 games. But I do think that this is going to be a long, drawn-out series. The thing about Miami right now is that Miami is running out of gas. And Miami, they're not as deep as they have been in past years. You know, LeBron, I mean, sure, the 3-day rest is going to help them, but after that, after they get this long rest, tonight they're going to go every other night. Games, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 will be every other night, with some that, you know, does not favor Miami as far as, you know, Dwayne Wade's knees, despite how well he's played. So I think Indiana's in pretty good shape, despite losing home court advantage. I think they're in pretty good shape. Obviously, Paul George's health withstanding. Obviously, if Paul George can get back to being Paul George, they'll have a much better chance if he has no effects from this concussion. So I think this is going to be a long, drawn-out series. Now, I expect it to be 2-2 when they get back to Indiana in Game 5.
Yeah, I think it should be 2-2, but this is my intuition. I think that Indiana needs to win Game 3. I think they're going to go back 3-1 if they don't win Game 3 or not even win Game 3, but make it challenging. If Miami happened to just have that hometown, just, you know, burst and blow them out, I can't see Indiana coming in the fourth game down 2-1 on the road. I just see Miami going up 3-1. But I think Indiana will win the first game, though. I have a feeling they're going to go to Miami and win.
I don't have a good feel for this game tonight, to be honest with you, because I don't know how healthy Paul George is going to be. Miami does play well at home. They've been great at home in the postseason in the era of James, Wade, and Bosh. It's funny you bring that up. I don't have a good feel for this game tonight. I think Miami's going to win, but I wouldn't be surprised if Indiana were to win. This game is much bigger. This is where I disagree with you. This game is much bigger for Miami than it is for Indiana. If you're Miami, you have home court advantage right now. You want to kind of put a stamp on that home court advantage and win Game 3. Because if you lose tonight, If you lose tonight, yes, you can come back and win game four and tie up at two. But if you lose tonight, you've just given back – you've given Indiana back home court advantage just like that.
Yeah.
And you put no – you want to put pressure – you put no pressure on Indiana. See,
yeah,
if you go – like, if you go up 2-1, if in Miami you go up 2-1, there's real pressure on Indiana to win game four. There's major pressure.
Well, you're right, and that's the tricky thing because – a series like that goes both ways. Just like you said, you disagree it's on Miami more, and I disagree because I think it's on Indiana more because if they don't win this game, you're right, the pressure goes back to Indiana, and Indiana is actually playing on Miami's turf, and you don't want to go down 3-1.
So 3-1, the series will be over. Yeah, 3-1, the series will be over.
And
so
that's a desperation game on the road. Like, they'll make that fourth game a desperation game on the road, and that's like crazy. So it's like it goes either way, though. You're right. It goes. That's the crazy part about the seven game series. It really goes either way, though, because the pressure is on Miami at the same time because they want to win this one. But if Indiana loses one, the third one, the fourth game, that's going to be a whole lot.
Yeah, this will be game. Yeah, this is game three tonight. It's like Indiana does not. Like, to me, they don't have to win tonight. I don't think either team has to win tonight. But again, if you had to ask me which team this game is more important to, I would say Miami more than Indiana, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I would say this game is more important for Miami to win than Indiana to win. Like, game three is...
Because that game if Indiana don't win that game three, I think that game four is like a game seven for them. No team wants to be down 3-1. Just like you just don't want to do that. Come down 3-1. So I don't know. That game four will be a lot of pressure on Indiana if Miami wins tonight, because they know they have to win it. It's like we have to win it and we have to win it on the road.
Yeah, I mean they'll be pressure. Yeah, I mean they'll be pressure on either team. The loser of this game is going to have major pressure not to be down 3-1, so that really goes. That's going to go both ways. You know, Miami. You know, Indiana wins tonight, and I can make an argument that there'll be even more pressure on Miami if they lose tonight than there would be Indiana loses tonight. Because if you're Indiana,
go ahead.
Here's what I'm saying. If you're Indiana, all you have to do is win one of these games. All you have to do is win one to get home court advantage back. So let's say Indiana loses game three. Okay, they lose game three. All right, we're not going to panic. We're down 2-1. All we have to do is win game four. We'll be back. We'll have home court advantage, and we will win. And we'll go back to we'll have home court advantage, and we go back home tied 2-2. Tied 2-2 with two out of three remaining games at home. Okay, Miami loses game three. Okay, Miami faces the prospects of not only being down 3-1, but they face the prospects of being down 3-1 and going back and having to win a road game in Indiana just to keep the series alive. So that, to me, that makes it a bigger game for Miami. Because to me, there's more. Like, if you know that, all they have to do is win game even if I lose game three, if I win game four, I'm going home 2-2. Versus if I'm down 2-1 and I lose game four, I'm going on the road down 3-1. So that's why I say that this is a bigger game for Miami than it is for Indiana.
But I feel if they lose this game, Miami's got one comfort. They got one comfort zone because it's like, okay, we lose this game, they still got the comfort of, oh, we're still home. We could win this game. It's like you get the comfort of home. Like, I think you feel better. Like, okay, we're down, but where will it be then? 2-1, but we're at home the next game. You know what I'm saying? So, but Indiana doesn't got that luxury. If they down 2-1, they still in Miami. You could possibly go down 3-1. So, I mean, this is all mixed up. It's just opinion, though, really, because it is It's just crazy. It's both ways, though. You're right. It's just, I can't even argue with you. You're saying that. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, I just always feel like it's more pressure on the home team. Once you've taken away home court advantage as the road team, which Miami did in game two, I always feel like that game three is critical to win, to kind of like hold serve, and sustain that break and serve. Like, I don't know if you're a big tennis fan, okay? So if you're playing a tennis match, you break somebody's serve. You want to hold your serve to sustain that break of serve. If you break serve and then you go back and have your serve broken, it really defeats the purpose. You really didn't accomplish anything.
What you just said earlier is why I say Miami could afford to lose this game, because this is what happens to most teams. As on the road, this is what happens. They do exactly what you said they do. They win the third game. Cool. They're like, I can go back home even if I lose the fourth game. They feel like that. And most of the time, it seems like the home team never goes back 3-1. They always tie the series in the fourth game because, like Indiana, like you said earlier, they'll get that, oh, we ain't got nothing to lose. We already took game three. Like, now all we could do is just win game four, and we'll be up 3-1, but they're not as ambitious because it's like, okay, it don't matter. We're good. We'll be back 2-2 at the worst and got home court advantage. And I wish we had some statistics. I'm pretty sure the statistics would go with the home team winning the fourth game when they down 2-1.
2-1, yeah.
Like,
I think you're right.
You know,
from that
teams
standpoint,
on the same level. I'm not talking about like some garbage teams.
Right. I think you're right from that standpoint. If Indiana does win this game three, that in game four they might relax a little bit, and a more desperate Miami team will definitely come out in game four and more than likely tie the series at 2-2, rather than from that standpoint. So, but either way, game three is a huge game for both teams in terms of, just look at the history of the NBA playoffs. Like 75% of teams that win game three win the series is tied. So it is a critical game for both teams. But I got to run here.
Having this conversation, I think they're going seven. It's going to end up seven. It just seems like it is.
I think these are two evenly matched teams. I think Indiana, Miami has the best player, but I think Indiana just matches up well against them. I think they know how to defend Miami. Their size bothers Miami. And they have a perimeter in terms of Lance Stephenson and also Paul George, who can match up with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. Not too many teams in the world have that. Guys that can guard both James and Wade. Now, can they shut LeBron James down? No, but you have a guy, Paul George, who can physically match up with LeBron James, who LeBron James has the guard on the other end of the court. So they and Lance Stephenson can guard either James or Wade if say George gets a foul trouble. So they have unique skills on the Indiana team, a unique skill set that very few teams in the NBA have that's able to match up with Miami. That's why, look at the last 3 years, other than San Antonio, Indiana has given Miami the most problems by far of any team in the league. I mean, 7-game series last year. Year before, it was a tough six-game series. So it should be, again, I expect it to be a long, drawn-out series. But, man, thanks for the call. You get back to us. You take it easy.
All right.
347-215-6180 is your call number. That was probably the longest non-argument I've ever been in terms of sports-wise. Like, we wasn't arguing per se, but it was just a long, lengthy disagreement. That's what you gotta love about radio and sports. Only sports can get those non. It's those arguments that you're kind of arguing and agreeing at the same time. It's crazy. 347-215-6180 is the call number. We both ended up came to the conclusion that it's going to be a long series. That's the funny part about it. We go through all that to come around to end the conversation with, hey, yeah, you know what? It's probably going to be a seven-game series. 347-215-6180 is your call number. But again, let's be honest. The NBA just completely, again, dropped the ball on the Paul George concussion situation. You know, I mean, these players are not going to admit to being hurt. I mean, there's a toughness mentality to these players. They're not going to admit to being hurt, period. Joining us right now, Rosalind Ross, who is going to help me figure out what the hell is going on in her beloved city of Memphis with their basketball organization. Rosalind, how are you doing this morning? Or this afternoon, I should say.
Yeah, I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing fine, Rosalind. Before we get to your beloved Grizzlies, who were valiant in defeat, played a great series against Oklahoma City, what are your thoughts on the Final Four of these conference finals, or what you've seen through these first two games in both series?
Well, you know, first I got to start with OKC, which, you know, if given that that's the team that went ahead and caused my Grizzlies to exit, you know, I had an investment in wanting them to go forward. And what I see just now, right now, just seems like they are overwhelmed by the Spurs. And I don't, you know, I didn't want to move really quickly in saying that the absence of Serge Ibaka was going to, you know, be the death knell for them. But I want to see Caron Butler more. I got to tell you that. I thought the Caron Butler lineup would be their better lineup because he can score and he's big. And I want to see more ugliness from Steven Adams down low. But even that, to me, doesn't feel like it's going to be quite enough. I don't know. They just don't look like the same team that, you know, the last two games against the Grizzlies basically just decided that they weren't having it, you know, that they were going to make sure that they got to the finals this year. And to hear the MVP of the season say, you know, whether we lose by 50 or whether we lose by one, we still lost. I mean, that loss was pretty embarrassing a few nights ago. So I really want to see Kevin Durant get angrier, and then maybe the rest of the team follow suit so they can get back to that grittiness, that toughness that they'll need to finish this thing off. I thought that the long series against us really benefited them because we were a tough out. I mean, the defense that Tony Allen played on KD and the defense that Tony Allen elevated the rest of the Grizzlies to play on everyone else on that team, I thought was going to prepare them, you know, for some true toughness throughout the rest of the playoffs. And then they get here, and I just don't see any of that. I see a team that really seems to be overwhelmed. I'm hoping they can pull it back around, but I don't know. This one could be – they maybe could win one game, or it could be a sweep. This seems like San Antonio is making a statement, and they're pretty serious about getting back to where they were last year at this time. Thing is, if San Antonio wins, they better not flake out like they did to me last year. I mean, I want to see this same stuff, you know, if they get into a battle with the Heat, as we saw last season. But who knows if that'll happen. But right now, I just don't know if OKC has enough to get it done.
I'm going to be honest with y'all. I've been shocked, absolutely shocked by what I've seen out of OKC. Even before the Ibaka injury, I thought San Antonio would win a tough, tough seven-game series that was basically a toss-up. Even after the Ibaka injury, I thought still that this would be a toss-up series. San Antonio would win. I thought Westbrook and Durant were finally coming into their own as a duo. And I was really impressed with how they played in that Clipper series. And I thought they were battle tested from the Memphis series and going to the Clippers, Memphis. I'm so down on Oakland OKC right now. I'm down on Scott Brooks. I think Scott Brooks is Doug Collins. I just don't think he's a, and I don't think he's a championship coach. I think Scott Brooks is just, I think he's a very good coach, but I don't think he's a coach that can take them to a championship, to be honest with you.
Wow.
His lack of adjustments. His lack of just, you know, of making adjustments like two games too early, two games too late. You know, we saw it in the finals against even the finals against Miami a couple of years ago, not going to the small lineup. That, you know, I just get a sense that Scott Brooks is just not the guy for that team. And I'm just down on, okay, I'm down, very down on OKC. But let's be honest, the number one story in this series is the San Antonio domination and the fact that they are absolutely on a mission. And, like, I mean, that's the first thing. Like, oh, you know, we can talk about Oklahoma City, Kevin Durant, talk about, you know, Noah Ibaka. But the bottom line is series. It's all about San Antonio right now as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. That's why I'm saying that, you know, they better not let me down when it's finals time, you know, because that was a team that very, you know, really, really, really should have been able to put a wrap on the Heat. And, you know, you see the magical coach that is Greg Popovich make what I thought was an error last year in having Tim Duncan on the bench for the final few minutes in a closeout game, which then turns into them losing the entire series. So I don't want, you know, what I don't want to happen is to see this in this series. And to me, this should easily translate. If they get to the finals, this should easily translate to their performance against the Heat or the Pacers. And I'm going to be really disappointed if I don't see this. It's beautiful basketball, what they're doing. And it's a team that is absolutely on a mission. Maybe they're taking the disappointment of the finals loss last year, and they're taking it to anybody that gets in their path right now, and they're going to make it happen. So I want to see whatever I'm seeing now, whatever is driving this force, I hope it continues, because this is the kind of basketball I like to see played at this time of the year.
Well, what are your thoughts on the Indiana-Miami series so far?
You know, everything you said about Scott Brooks is the way I'm feeling about Frank Vogel. I don't know what's up with it, you know. Over the course of the playoffs, I've seen that team not just in, an eighth seed took them to the brink or whatever, right? But that team goes through stretches, big, long, super-duper stretches where they don't play with any energy, no focus, and no intensity. And, oh, by the way, I've seen them go stretches where, you know, there's like a 16-0 run by the other team and barely nary a timeout call. I don't know what's up with that. I'm feeling very iffy on Frank Vogel. And because of that, I'm feeling iffy on what this team can do throughout the rest of the series here with the Heat. Just to me, it seems the problems that they have, I'm seeing a coach that can't get enough in their head. And the other thing I'm seeing is that for as much time as people have spent talking about, you know, Paul George being this elite player, being this great player that's on the brink of, you know, MVP LeBron type of status, more than anything, what I see is kind of a Rudy Gay type of player. That's the experience of it. I mean, that's
wow.
A person who's dealt with Rudy Gay in Memphis. I'm seeing a person who could be really, really awesome, but goes away for stretches and seems very content with being a perimeter player. And, I got to say that, you know, it's a big deal if he – I haven't seen whether or not he's going to play tonight, whether he passed the concussion test or not. But
yeah, he's been cleared to play.
Oh, so he's been cleared to play. Okay, great.
Which is another story in itself, by the way, how that whole
right,
situation.
Right, another story in itself, exactly, which I'm sure is going to lead to a complete review of the – you know, because there's so much chatter about – the so-called test that he underwent, the fact that they cleared him, the fact that he said he blacked out. So this is probably going to lead to, a complete review of the NBA's concussion policy, especially with what both leagues are trying to do in driving this type of care and awareness with young players, with younger little kids who are playing basketball and football in neighborhoods all across the country. They're going to review the policy and see what's up with that. But hopefully we can see the Paul George that – might have been MVP, because even before that concussion, he wasn't really a big factor in the last game. I'm not ready to say that they are done, but they can't fall asleep, and they've been falling asleep, and they lack intensity, and they start sloughing off, and, you know, they get out of their offense. And to me, that's all coaching stuff. That's like call a timeout and get those guys over there and get them together. And I don't know what's up with Frank Vogel on that.
Hopefully
he can do better this game.
What are your thoughts on Miami? they cruised through the first two rounds of the playoffs, really against underwhelming competition. I know, Brooklyn gave them a little run towards the end of that series. Maybe if Deron Williams had, you know, showed up anyway, maybe if Deron Williams was even a third of the player he once was, you know, it could have been a 6 or 7 game series. But for the most part, Miami has cruised to the conference finals. Are you seeing some chinks in their armor? Do you think that they are – how do you feel about them now as in comparisons to prior title runs?
Well, I definitely see some weakness. I mean, a lot of the conversation has been about, you know, the fact that their bench isn't what it was last season even. What I have seen – what I do feel like are the chinks is still pretty difficult for me to describe. I'm not sure what it is just yet. So it'd be easy for me to say, yes, the bench, but there still seems to be, they don't seem to be the foreboding force that they felt like to me last year. So I'm hoping that this game tonight is going to tell me more about what it is I feel like they're lacking. And maybe it won't because of everything I said about Indiana, but
right.
You know, I do feel that if they end up getting to the finals against the Spurs, like I said, if the Spurs come in like they've gone so far, I think Miami loses. But, you know, it's always hard to say that when they got that guy, right, when they got LeBron James, who at any moment, you know, can turn an entire series. And I think you saw that in what happened in Game 2 against Indiana. He and Wade both, you know, You look at the, I think they had 21 and 22 respectively, and both of them, I think LeBron scored 12 in the fourth and Wade scored 10 in the fourth. So that just shows you, it just goes to show when they decide that they want to put somebody away or they decide that they're going to take the game over, they can do that and it can come out for good results for them. But I do see a little bit of a weakness, and it's certainly not having, which I'm surprised even to hear myself say this, but not having a guy like Mike Miller you know, on the team this year makes a difference. So right now it feels like they're benched, but it may be a little more than that. So I'll have to look to see tonight what it is that could be their weakness going into the finals if they make it there.
There's no question that they miss Mike Miller. Mike Miller played great in that Oklahoma City series and really had a, you know, I know he had some injuries during the season, but when he was in it, when I saw Mike Miller during the course of this season, he just shot the ball extremely well. So that was a big loss for them.
We used Mike Miller a lot. I mean, you know, I was, you know, when he first got there and I saw his minutes, when he first came to Grizzlies and I saw the minutes he was playing, I was very concerned about that. But it's like he found the fountain of youth and gave quality minutes and really made a difference in a lot of our games and certainly in what we were able to do for, you know, the little bit of that amount of time that we had in the playoffs. So I have to imagine they miss him. You know, they definitely miss him. And we'll probably see a lot more of what they miss. But you got, like I said, you got LeBron. He covers up a multitude of sins and flaws with your team. So we'll see what happens tonight. I'm really counting on understanding what the heck is going on with both of these teams tonight. I think it's going to tell me a lot about what might happen through the rest of the series.
So getting moving to your Memphis Grizzlies, who... when I saw this stuff, like, you know, so for the last 2 years, okay, Memphis has won 50-plus games, 150 games this year despite Gasol being out for 23 games, Mark Gasol, who is their best player. Last year, they get rid of Lionel Hollins after going to the conference finals, okay. Come back this year, Jager does a very good job with that team. He was kind of, you know, people didn't know who he was, kind of under the radar for the most of the season, but did a very good job this season. Now he's interviewing to be the coach of Minnesota. Your owner, you know, fires two front office people. What exactly is happening with that franchise right now?
It's hard to know, and it's disappointing because what the fans here want, you know, more than anything, especially in after a high-profile firing last year of Lionel Hollins, what we didn't want to be is in a position again this spring where we're talking about a shakeup with the team, and we're right back here. Yeah, so I've heard several different versions, so I'll lay out everything I've heard. So the first thing I've heard is that there was some sort of internal disagreement between the CEO, Jason Levin, who's no longer here, and the actual general counsel for the team. And Tara chose the general counsel side, and that ended Levin. So that was like one of the first things I heard. I also heard that there was a point in the, as it relates to Dave Yeager, there was a point in the season where Tara had promised some players that they would play. Yeager didn't play those players, and we were in a rough patch, and Tara wanted to let Yeager go at that time. I think Levin made the Yeager call, right? So if there was any point where there was a time in the season where Tara thought Yeager needed to go, that was connected for him in his mind to Jason Levin. The last thing, though, that I've heard that feels really solid to me, and actually, as a person who spent a good portion of my time in corporate America, I have to show some respect for is, the rumblings here have also been that Tara met with each and every player individually on the team. And after speaking with them about leadership and about what was happening in the locker room, he decided that changes needed to be made. Now, if that, in fact, is the case, then I'm going to have a good amount of respect for that. Because the bottom line is, Yeager comes in, he spends about a week maybe playing his offense, which was disastrous and abysmal. And then the next thing you know, he reinstalls what Lionel Hollins had been doing, and the team starts to look better. Oh, then the injury happens, and he gets a little bit of a pass because Gasol is out, and that was a big loss for us. And then the team comes back, and everything is fine. But for me to – it's hard for me to give him – I don't want to say it's hard for me to give him all the credit for that. But what we saw to start the season was actually Yeager's system, so I understand it. And after that was just the disaster that it was, he went back and installed more of what Lionel Hollins had been doing with the team. But if the players were disappointed and had expressed as much, you know, and of course I'm sure you heard about the meeting that was had early in the season where Gasol and Conley sat down with Yeager and said, look, we got to get back to doing what we know to do. We look terrible right now. And right. After that meeting is when the change happened and you saw the team start to go forth before Mark's injury. You know, so if the players were disappointed and had, you know, were a little bit discombobulated, you don't want to see this kind of shakeup, but I kind of admire a guy who's deciding to do what's best for his franchise, what he feels is right. Now, to me, what would have been right would have been to keep Lionel Hollins. So I'm always gonna have a little bit of that in the back of my mind, because if that change doesn't happen, then we probably don't even end up here in the first place. But since that happened and now we're here, apparently Yeager, you know, that thing with the players being promised to play and he didn't do it, apparently that really offended him, and he wants out as much as maybe these guys want him out. We do have Chris Wallace back in the interim GM position, and that's important because Chris Wallace was a fan favorite. He put a lot of what we see on the floor, he put that together. So he'll bring in some stability. It's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing goes, though, if there's going to be compensation for Yeager to leave or whatever that's going to mean, and if it's going to mean, again, we're back in this coaching discussion. So already there were rumors of Coach Cal. There was we're talking about George Karl maybe getting here. So all of that starting again, and it's just not where we want it to be as the fans of this franchise. So we're, you know, fingers crossed that this thing comes out in a productive, positive way. But, you know, now we don't feel as confident in that because we're right back where we were last spring, and it's a tough spot to be in. It really is.
I'm going to say this. I'm trying to make Yeager out to be, you know, Phil Jackson here. But just... The owner, I mean, that owner, the owner's too involved. He's way too involved. I mean, it's just like when the owner starts talking to the players and starts, you know, you got a general counsel, and I'm like, first of all, there's too many chefs in the kitchen. General manager, general counsel, this exec, that exec. Just seems like the owner is just, he's just too involved in the day-to-day operations as far as what's going on. I mean, I just,
I
from
agree.
That standpoint.
I agree. agree. And it's hard, to me, it's hard not to. The entire shakeup was tough for me because, in my opinion, it's just hard not to have a basketball person in the front office. Like, you need a basketball guy. And I really, you know, and it's tough for me to see Levy and leave because I really liked him. We had him on one of our, when I was working with Yahoo Sports Radio last year, we had him on our show, and he was just awesome to talk to. And he really seemed genuinely invested in the Memphis community and, you know, seemed like a great guy who was invested in the team as well. So that's a tough loss for me. I agree that, you know, you can't have your owner promising guys they're going to play. I mean, that just can't happen. That can't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it totally undermines the coach. I mean, That can't happen.
Truly,
I mean,
undermines the coach. Yeah, it absolutely cannot happen. But to me, that's the kind of stuff you start to see when, I guess I'm just old school. You need a basketball guy. You need some dude who played for a team somewhere that's somewhere involved with the upper management level of your team. And when you don't have that, I think you have a lot of guys with a lot of money who are very excited to own a team who kind of, I don't want to say they play with it like it's a toy, but it is kind of like, you know, their biggest dream, and now they get to have it. And sometimes it ends up being somebody too involved, somebody making promises that shouldn't be made. You need a basketball guy. Like I said, I'm glad we got Chris Wallace back. I think that's going to make a little bit of a difference until things get straightened out. Even so, now if Jaeger stays, it's going to be a strained relationship. It's hard to know how this is going to play out. But like I said, I mean, we're in a small market. So when you start playing around like this on a small market, particularly in a city like Memphis that is basketball crazy, we expect a lot of our teams, whether it's the Memphis Tigers or the Memphis Grizzlies, and there's not the level of loyalty to the Grizzlies just yet. The Tigers get, like, carte blanche. Like, nobody plays around with the Tigers here. They can do whatever they want to do, and the fans love that team. The Grizzlies aren't there yet. So this is a very, you know, tumultuous little time to make sure that this ownership can stay in the right, you know, stay in the right frame of mind for the fans here. If not, it's going to be tough going forward. It really is.
Let me ask you this, big picture, as far as just beyond Memphis and just in the NBA in general. We've seen now, you know, what happened with Golden State and the Mark Jackson situation. We see where the Lakers are at right now with Jim Buss's thumb. And you know, the Memphis Grizzlies situation with that owner. Are you concerned as a basketball fan that owners are becoming even more entitled than what they already were, and that they're just, and that this is going to, like, even drag down the product on the NBA court? Because you think about it, the NBA, like baseball, like football right now, has more money, revenue being generated than ever, and that pot is only going to get bigger once they sign this new television deal in a couple of years, whoever they sign it with. And that's just going to give just more money in the owner's pockets. So, I mean, I think this has been an underreported story, just how more hands-on these owners are. And, you know, football, you expect it to an extent. You expect it shouldn't happen in football either. But, you know, you got the Jerry Joneses, the Daniel Snyders, those type of owners. But for the most part, you know, we know the more successful situations are where you have everybody just doing one job and everybody staying in their place. But are you concerned about that for the NBA, for the future of the NBA?
Yeah, I'm very concerned about it because you're right. It ultimately ends up dragging down the product that's on the floor, and it puts people in a position, like, you don't know, you know, really for the fans, you kind of don't know which way is up. And one of the things you want to be able to do when you attach yourself to a team is you really want to get attached, and you want to, you know, it's hard for a fan to reconcile the idea that a guy, a coach, had a successful season but then loses his job. And, you know, we don't care that you guys aren't getting along. We don't really care about that. We care about the fact that this coach was able to get this team to win. and to do so over, you know, successfully over the course of the season. So that stuff kind of feels over the heads of fans from time to time. And, you know, I'm at the core of me, regardless of whether I'm a journalist or not, I'm a fan. And it's tough for me to see guys who've had success being let go. The thing is, though, you know, you look at a guy like Greg Popovich, who, you know, who is, again, in this position where he may be headed to the finals, and who's had a very long, successful run with his team. He's been given, you know, this is a coach that was given the ability by the ownership to do what was best for the team. And it has meant that there's been some tough times, but ultimately, over the course of his run, he's had a successful run. And he's been given the ability to do what he needs to do and was able to get a guy in place as a GM that supported the vision. And you want to see more synergy happen like that across the league and some people that are really willing to commit to a coach and see what he can do. But at the end of the day, if the owner, and we know this, if the owner isn't putting out, if he isn't allowing the right moves to be made, getting, you know, opening up his wallet for quality players, it's hard to blame it all on the coach, but the coach always gets blamed. And that's in a bad situation. But it makes absolutely no sense to any reasonable fan that when you can win 56 games or, you know, Mark Jackson taking his team to the playoffs and having a successful run gets let go. It makes no sense. And I think it is a result of overzealous ownership, you know, trying to go for the gusto and gambling around, playing with fan loyalty. And it's a bad deal. It's a bad deal for the game. But coincidentally, the more money that's available, you know, as you said, this new TV deal comes up. So the more money that happens, that gets infused into the league, may make them feel even more powerful in that. And the fans are going to lose while they're still getting rich and owning a team. We're going to be the ones that have to pay the price. And it's unfortunate. And the players, because players want to be a part of a successful, stable organization. So they lose as well, but the owners will keep getting rich. And I think it's the thing that we got to get. There's got to be some control. A handle has got to be gotten on it pretty soon before the league loses the complete integrity of what is supposed to be happening. Basketball games should be won, and teams should be competing. Beyond that, everything else is kind of, you know, we're kind of like over the rest of it. We want to see a team win, and when a team wins, it's hard. We don't want to see very. We don't even want to know who the owner is. I mean, you know, especially when you look at a Clippers situation, it's like that team was winning. I don't want to have to hear from your owner. I don't want to learn that he's that guy, and I have to learn that now. You know, so we want the team to win and be done with it, and we want a coach to be rewarded for it. If a coach is having a hard time, then we get it. But it's tough to have this level of ownership involvement. It really is.
No question about it, Rosalind. And I think that the thing about it is, and to me, you know, the biggest problem in the NBA in general, you know, people don't talk about style of play or talk about players coming out early and what have you. The biggest problem, the bottom line, the biggest problem in the NBA right now is there are not enough franchises and teams that are properly and correctly run. I mean, outside of San Antonio, Miami, OKC, you know. Who do you like? There are about three or four franchises that you trust in terms of decision making, drafting, the whole nine yards, things of that nature. Like, who do you really trust in terms of how they're running their franchise? There are not that many, about a handful of them, and the other 20 to 25 teams are just are clueless. Whether it's bad ownership, not having the right general manager, giving the wrong people the right jobs, to the wrong people. So I think that's a huge problem in the NBA that is not going to be made better with owners getting that much more involved. Rosalind, as always, thanks for coming on. We'll definitely try to link up for the NBA Finals. Hopefully, probably more than likely, it'll be, you know, San Antonio, Miami. Who knows? Maybe Indiana surprises both of us and gets there. But we'll certainly talk to you down the road.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much for having me.
All right, thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right, talk to you. Rosalind Ross, of course, does a tremendous job as always. And listen, it's a big problem in the NBA. It's a big problem with just how many poorly ran franchises there are in the NBA. And seems like it's not getting, doesn't get talked about enough. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Circle Review. Thanks to Roz and Ross for joining us. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. I'll see you soon.